After speaking with the mayor, the pair of men stepped out onto the boardwalk.
I need for you to do me a favor, Cal.
Sure.
I want you to mosey on over to the livery and have a talk with the boy that works there.
What about?
I got to thinking when we were talking to the mayor that there was someone else who knew we brought Pearlie into town.
Of course. The boy at the livery who took care of our horses. You gave him money to take care of Pearlie's horse until he got well, and you even told him Pearlie was over at the docks.
That's right. We need to find out just who these two might have talked to that might have had a reason to go after Pearlie or me.
You can count on me, Smoke. Even that boy told anyone about us, I'll find out.
I know you will, Cal. Counting on you.
Smoke spent some time browsing in the general store until all of the other customers had left and he was alone with the proprietor. After a few minutes, the man walked over to stand behind Smoke while he fingered some fancy holsters.
Can I help you, sir?
Are you Mr. Jacobson?
Sure am, Robert Jacobson, but everyone calls me Bob. Pleased to meet you. Are you new in town, Mr.?
Jensen. Smoke Jensen. And no, I haven't moved to town. Something wrong, Mr. Jacobson?
No. Why, nothing's wrong.
Good.
Smoke moved to the door. He reached up and pulled the shade down, turning the cardboard sign in the door's window from open to closed.
Here now!
Jacobson turned as if he was going to run toward the back door.
I wouldn't do that, Bob. You wouldn't get 10 feet before I dropped you like a bad habit.
Is this a holdup?
Oh, put your hands down, Bob. I just want to talk to you without any interruptions for a few minutes.
About what?
I think you know what about, Bob. You were the one sending messages back and forth between Dr. Bentley and me about my friend Pearlie.
That's right. So what?
Well, I think you got to shooting your mouth off about those messages and told someone here in town I had a friend at the doc's office.
No, no, I would never talk about any of my messages. The company would fire me for that.
So you never gossiped about me to any of your friends?
Certainly not.
You know, Bob, just before I left Pueblo for here, I got a message from Dr. Bentley telling me there'd been no change in Pearlie's condition. Do you remember that message?
No. Why should I?
Because the doctor was already dead when the message was sent, and Pearlie had already been arrested for his killing.
You're right, Mr. Jensen, you're right.
Now, what I need to know, Bob, is why would you do something like that?
The sheriff, Mr. Jensen, the sheriff made me do it. He told me he hurt me if I told anyone about it, even though I told him it was wrong, and that I could lose my job over it.
You mean Sheriff Buck Tolliver ordered you to send that wire, telling me that Pearlie was still unconscious, so I'd hurry to come back to payday?
Jacobson nodded, his face flaming red with humiliation and shame.
Now why would...
A faint tickling at the back of Smoke's mind reminded him that Tolliver had looked somehow familiar when they'd first met.
We're going to forget this talk ever took place, aren't we, Mr. Jacobson?
Yes, sir.
And you're especially not going to tell the sheriff we talked, are you?
No, no.
Good. Then I'll see you later, Bob.
Mr. Jensen?
Yes, Bob?
You're not going to mention anything about that message I sent you to the company, are you? I really need that job. The store doesn't do that well.
Don't worry, Bob. Like I said, this conversation is going to be our little secret.
Cal walked into the livery and over to where the boy had put his and Smoke's horses, right next to the stall that held Pearlie's mount. Cal busied himself with running a curry comb over his horse Dusty until the stable was empty of all other customers. He put the curry comb down then and ambled over to where the boy was mucking out a stall with a pitchfork that looked as big as he was.
Howdy.
Howdy.
My name's Cal Woods.
I'm Jerome Stone, but everybody calls me Jerry.
Well, Jerry, I see you have a good memory for faces.
Huh?
Yeah, my friend and I were here about 2 weeks ago, and I left another friend's horse with you. And this time, when we come back, I noticed you knew to put our horses next to our friend's bronc without us having to tell you which one it was.
Oh, yeah. Well, it weren't so much. After all, ain't that many fellers come in here riding full-blooded Palouse studs. Matter of fact, you three are the first ones I've seen riding that particular kind of horse.
Oh, is that all there was to it? I thought maybe it was because you recognized that fella I rode in here with. He's kind of famous most places.
Well, no, not really. Actually, your big friend in the buckskins is kind of hard to forget. He's probably the first real true-to-life gunslinger I've ever seen.
What makes you think he is a gunslinger, Jerry, if you didn't recognize who he was?
Oh, come on, Cal. Both of you wear your irons like gunslingers. And don't try to tell me I'm wrong either, because I read all of Ned Buntline's Penny Dreadfuls, and he's pretty clear on that particular point.
What point is that, Jerry?
About the way gunslicks tie their pistols down low on their leg, whereas regular cowboys wear them up high, so they won't get hung up on brush and such.
Oh, you're not wrong, really. Just that Smoke gave up his gunslinging days a long time ago. He's just a rancher now, like me.
Smoke? Don't tell me that man was Smoke Jensen!
Yep. Don't tell nobody, Jerry. He don't exactly like to advertise when he's in town, because all the men gunning for him.
Jumping Jehoshaphat! I can't believe I curried the horse of the famous Smoke Jensen!
Jerry reached into his pocket and took out the money Smoke had given him as a tip.
Oh, I'm going to keep this here money and never spend it. And I'm going to tell everybody my friend, the famous Smoke Jensen, give it to me. No wonder the sheriff almost fainted when I described your friend to him.
What did you say about the sheriff?
Oh, nothing. I didn't say nothing. Don't hit me, mister, please.
Oh, don't be silly, Jerry. I'm not going to hit you. But you did say something about the sheriff.
Well, after you was here a couple weeks ago, the sheriff came by and saw that Palouse you left for your friend. He asked me about it, and I told him about you and Smoke. Though, of course, I didn't know his name at the time. Well, when I described Smoke to him, the sheriff turned as white as my mama's sheets and dang near passed out right there in the street. Heck, I thought I was going to have to throw a bucket of water on him to wake him up.
Did he say anything else?
No, not really. He asked what y'all were doing in town, and I told him about you leaving your sick friend over at the docks and all.
So the sheriff seemed interested in what Smoke and I were doing in town, huh?
Well, heck yes. After I told him what I knew, he turned and wandered off like his mind was off somewhere else. Dang near got runned over by a couple of hosses on his way to the docks, too.
You mean he left here and went directly to the doctor's office?
Sure did. And he was mumbling something about he couldn't believe it, not after all these years or something like that.
Cal didn't know exactly where to find Smoke, so he decided to wait for him in the saloon. Besides, all that talking and excitement had made him kind of thirsty for a cold beer. As soon as his eyes were adjusted, Cal saw Smoke standing at the bar, his elbows planted around a shot glass of whiskey, and he started to walk toward him. Smoke saw him coming and gave a minute shake of his head, cutting his eyes toward the nearby table that was empty. Cal took the hint and altered his course to the table and took a seat, pretending not to look at Smoke. One of the girls came over.
You want some company?
No, but if you get the bartender to send over a glass of beer, I'll buy you a shot, too.
I don't really like liquor all that much, but I'll take the money instead and get you your beer if you don't let on to the bartender about it.
Sure thing, ma'am.
You sure you don't want some company? We got some awfully nice rooms upstairs where we could go and be alone while you drink your beer.
No thank you, ma'am. I'm just here waiting for a friend of mine. As soon as he gets here, we gotta leave. Otherwise, I'd be right honored to go upstairs with you.
All right, cowboy. It's your loss.
Cal was on his second beer when he saw Smoke pat the man next to him at the bar on the shoulder, throw some money down, and walk over towards Cal's table.
Did you learn anything from our friend over at the livery?
Cal nodded and filled Smoke in on what Jerry had told him about the sheriff, his obvious interest in their business, and how he'd acted when he recognized Smoke from Jerry's description.
What did you find out?
Pretty much the same as you. The sheriff seemed to show a lot of interest in our comings and goings, more than would be usual for a sheriff in a small town like this, especially since he didn't have any paper on me.
Yeah, and Jerry said he went right off to talk to the doc about what Pearly was doing there, and to find out what he could do about us.
You know, Cal, I'm inclined to think the sheriff is hip deep in this affair. And what worries me is, I don't know why.
Jerry seemed to think that the sheriff knew you, or at least recognized who you were from your description. Does that mean anything to you?
Not really. I've crossed paths with more than my share of hard men in the past, Cal. And it could be that Sheriff Tolliver is one of them. Word around town is that the sheriff always has a pocket full of money and has a hell of a nice spread out of town, stocked with some fine livestock. Much better than what he makes a sheriff would account for.
Where do you think he gets it?
There's been rumors of miners turning up missing, and friends of the sheriff turning up with signed bills of sale from their claims, but nothing definite anyone wants to get involved with. I get the idea everyone is pretty much afraid of Tolliver and his friends, and no one wants to stand up to them.
And they told you all this?
Give these miners enough whiskey, and before you know it, they're telling you their life story and anything else you want to hear. But like I said, most of it is just miners' gossip, so a lot of it can be discounted.
It's still strange that they would repeat all that to you since they don't know you.
Not when you think about it. Mining is a pretty lonely business. After working for months alone in the mountains, when you come to a town and someone buys you whiskey and offers a sympathetic ear, it's only natural to want to talk more than you should. The two best places to pick up on gossip are a woman's quilting circle and the most popular bar in town. Because the only person who gossips more than women is a man who's drunk more than he can handle.
After discussing it for a while, Smoke and Cal decided about the only person in town they dared to trust with their new information about the sheriff was the mayor, Sam Hemmings, and only because he seemed to genuinely believe in Pearlie's innocence. They met him in his office just after lunch.
What can I do for you, boys? You come up with any evidence that might help clear Pearlie?
Well, it's not exactly evidence, Sam. But we've been talking to some people around town, and we've come up with some rather strange behavior on the sheriff's part. We'd like to see what you think about it.
I don't see what that has to do with the case, but go ahead. I'm willing to listen to anything at this point.
Smoke began by telling Hemmings what Jacobson had said about how the sheriff had told him to send the fake wire to get Smoke and Cal back to town. And then Cal finished by detailing what the livery boy Jerry had told him about the sheriff's strange reaction to his description of Smoke, and how he'd immediately gone to the docks to investigate Pearlie.
I agree. Sheriff Tolliver's actions seem a bit out of the ordinary, but they don't necessarily mean he's had something to do with Dr. Bentley's death. It might just be that you two have crossed paths in the past, Smoke, and that as sheriff, he was worried about having a, no offense, rather famous gunfighter in his town.
Let me say something, Sam, and give me a little leeway on it until you hear all of it.
All right.
Let's assume, for the sake of argument, that the sheriff has a long-time, very strong grudge against me for some reason that I'm unaware of.
Go on.
And then he comes into town one day and sees a strange horse. When he inquires of the livery boy, he's given a description of me, and it shakes him up so much that even the livery boy notices it.
But how could he recognize you from a description that could fit dozens of men?
Sam, how many men do you suppose run around in this day and time in buckskins, are over 6 feet tall, and have two guns and a knife on their holster tied down low on their legs? I agree, there are lots of big men with light-colored hair, but when you put that with the buckskins and the guns, it may have struck enough of a chord with Tolliver that he wanted to see the doctor and check it out to see if it really was me.
All right. I'll grant you that you do present a rather unique appearance. Go on.
Now, once he's determined that I might be in town, what is he to do? He has to go immediately to the doctor's house to see if it really is me and find out what the hell I'm doing in his town after all these years.
I can see that, and I suppose that the doctor fills him in that it is indeed Smoke Jensen and that you've left your very good friend in his care.
And not only that, but he probably tells Tolliver that we've been keeping in touch by telegraph from Pueblo. So his next stop is to see Jacobson and find out what else he can.
All right. Even granting all of that, how would you get from there to the killing of the doctor? Like I said, each and every one of his actions could just as easily be explained by the fact that he's sheriff here and it's his job to keep the peace. Maybe he just wanted to keep an eye on a notorious gunman, that is all.
So just suppose again, for the sake of argument, that Tolliver decided to have Pearlie killed. Now that would do two things. One, it would cause me great grief and pain. And two, it would bring me running back to town.
And that's where Pearlie's story starts to make sense. He says he woke up to find that Blackie man, the sheriff's cousin, remember, standing over him with a gun. It makes sense that the sheriff would have sent someone he trusted to do the dirty work. Someone who'd never tell that the sheriff had ordered him to commit cold-blooded murder.
According to his testimony, The sheriff was having drinks and dinner with the doctor when he and Blackie decided to make their rounds. What if, in fact, it was just Tolliver that walked the doctor back home, intending to be there when he found Pearlie dead? But instead, he found Blackie dead and Pearlie lying unconscious near the body.
That would put him in a devilish position, trying to explain what Blackie was doing in the doc's house and how he happened to get himself killed by a man in a coma.
Exactly. His only way out would be to do what I think he did. Kill the doctor and try to put the blame on Pearlie.
That would also work to get Smoke back to town once we found out about Pearlie's arrest. And then he'd have him right where he wanted him if he intended to do him some harm.
And what better way to hurt me than to make me watch my good friend being hanged for something I would be sure he hadn't done.
All right. You two have at least given one way things could have happened that would explain the sheriff's actions. But you still have not one shred of proof or evidence to back up your claim. It could just as easily have happened just as the sheriff said it did, if we assume Pearlie is guilty.
You're right, Sam. But we're going to work on that. We just wanted someone in this town to know what we were doing and why.
Hemmings was about to reply when the door burst open and Robert Jacobson ran in.
Say, Mayor?
He stopped, his face flushing bright red when he saw Smoke and Cal sitting there.
Oh, I didn't know you had someone here. I'll come back.
No, don't be silly, Bob. You can talk in front of these men. What is it?
This wire came for you just now. I thought you might ought to see it right away. The wire specifically asked that the contents be kept strictly confidential, Mayor.
Hemmings took the wire and read it, being careful not to hold it where anybody else in the room might be able to read it, too. When he was finished, he immediately glanced at Smoke and Cal.
All right, Bob, thank you. I'll take care of it. This may solve all of our problems, one way or another. The doctor's aunt, Janet Rule, was staying at his house at the time of the murders. She probably saw everything.
We know, Sam. Our next stop is to try and find her to get the evidence we need to clear Pearlie.
You won't need to find her. She's going to come here, and she says she has some information for me to hear about the killings.
Great news! When is she going to get here?
I don't think I should divulge that information, Smoke. After all, if I'm wrong and Pearlie is guilty and you're trying to protect him, then you might be inclined to prevent Ms. Rule from testifying by fair means or foul.
But, of course, you can't be 100% sure we're on the up and up. And you have to protect your witness. I can see that. But don't you think it's strange that she sent the wire to you and not to the sheriff? After all, he is the law in town. And I can think of only one reason she wouldn't feel safe in confiding her account of the murder to him.
I agree. It is strange for her to send the wire to me, but I guess we'll just have to wait until she gets here for her to tell us her reasons for doing so. Thank you, Smoke, for being so understanding of my need for secrecy, and I assure you, you'll be the first to hear what she's told me after we talk.
That's all we can ask, Sam. Thank you.
For me, my money's on her telling me that Pearlie had nothing to do with the doctor's death.
You and us both. I'll also bet she tells you that the sheriff's up to his eyeballs in this mess.
As soon as he left Mayor Hemmings' office, Robert Jacobson walked straight to Sheriff Tolliver's office.
What do you want, Bob?
I got this wire from Pueblo a while ago, Buck. I thought you ought to know about it.
What is it? Has the sheriff there located that Rule lady?
Better than that, Buck.
Well, what is it? Don't just stand there grinning like a cat with a bird in its mouth.
Oh, this is much better than a bird, Buck. But first, you gotta promise you won't tell nobody I told you about the wire. It wasn't addressed to you. And if anyone finds out, I could get fired.
Well, who the hell was the damn thing addressed to?
Mayor Hemmings.
Hemmings? Who was it from?
It was from that Miss Rule herself you've been looking for. And it was sent to Mayor Hemmings. She said she's gonna be on the afternoon train tomorrow from Pueblo. And that she ain't gonna get off. She wants Hemmings to meet her on the last car in the train while it stopped, and she's going to tell him something important about the killing of Doc Bentley, but she didn't say what she was going to tell him.
Bob, am I the only one you've told this to?
Why, no, Buck. I gave the written message to Mayor Hemmings like it was addressed, but I thought you ought to know about a thing like that being in your town because you're the one investigating the crime.
No, that's not true, Bob. I already got the killer in jail, and he's already been convicted, so nothing Miss Rule or anyone else has to say in the matter makes any difference to me.
Then you ain't gonna go and talk to her?
Nah, I don't think so, Bob. But hey, thanks for filling me in. I'm sure the mayor will tell me all about what the old lady had to say next time I see him.
Sure thing, Sheriff. Glad to be of help.
Oh, and Bob, one more thing.
Yeah?
I wouldn't go around telling anyone you told me about the wire from Miss Rule. After all, it wasn't addressed to me, and if the company found out you were giving me confidential messages, they'd not only fire you, but they'd probably prosecute you and put you in jail.
Now, Sheriff, you asked me...
Yes, I did, Bob, and I appreciate the way you're cooperating with the law, so I won't tell anyone about it either. It's just that the company might not be so understanding, if you get my drift.
You can bet I won't tell nobody, Sheriff.
Jerry Stone looked up from his usual job of mucking stables and smiled nervously when he saw it was the sheriff. He hoped that Cal feller hadn't said nothing to the sheriff about what he told him. If there was one thing Jerry didn't need, it was John Law on his back.
Howdy, Sheriff. What can I do for you? You need your horse saddled?
Yeah, and I need it quick.
Sure thing, Sheriff.
Tolliver turned the head of his dun gelding down the trail that led to the mining cabin, where his men spent their time between jobs when they weren't in town. It was one of the first mines he and his men had liberated from its previous owners, now dead and forgotten. And it was still their best producer of gold ore, except, of course, for his new acquisition. But they didn't know anything about that, and if he played his cards right, they never would.
Yo, the cabin!
Yo, yourself!
Jeb Hardy stood with a rifle in his hands near the corner of the cabin.
You heard me coming, huh?
I heard that old horse of yours puffing and farting for the last quarter mile. Wouldn't be so windy if you'd give him a little grain instead of all that hay.
The boy's inside. I got some business to discuss.
Yeah, all but Bubba. He ain't been here for 2-3 days. We figure he's staying with that Molly girl over at the saloon, spending all his loot from the last job. I can't understand that boy, and that's a fact. If he wanted to lie down with a horse-faced female, we got plenty of horses up here at the cabin.
That ain't it, Jeb. Bubba's dead.
Dead? What do you mean dead?
Dead, as in not breathing anymore. That kind of dead.
What the hell happened?
You remember how he told us about him and Hogg bracing Jensen and his friend a couple of weeks ago, and how Jensen took his gun away and dropped it in the dirt down the trail a ways?
Yeah, what of it?
I guess he nursed a grudge and he tried to settle it last night with his pistol. And Jensen ventilated him.
He managed to put a lead pill in Jensen?
Nope. Far as I can tell, Bubba never got off a shot.
Oh, please don't tell me that some bitch was dumb enough to draw against a man like Jensen.
No, he walked into the bathroom over at the hotel and surprised Jensen and his friend while they were taking baths.
And Jensen still managed to kill him?
Nobody ever accused Bubba of being smart or fast with a gun. Let's not tell the others just yet, all right?
Sure. All right by me, but I gotta tell you, Buck. I ain't planning on letting Jensen get away with this. Bubba wasn't no prize, but he's still one of us, and Jensen's gotta be made to pay.
Count on it, Jib.
Hogg and Akins were sitting at the table playing cards.
I see Jeb didn't shoot a hole in your ass with that big Henry of his.
Hey, let's finish this hand. I got a good one this time.
Take it, Hogg. I was bluffing anyway.
While Hogg grinned and raked in the pile of bills, Kid looked at Hardy and then at Tolliver.
What brings you to our happy home, Buck? You got more miners lined up for us to skin?
Not this time, Kid. It's more important than that.
What could be more important than making a few bucks the easy way?
Hardy pulled out a chair and the three men sat and listened while Tolliver told them about the wire from Janet Rule and how she was supposed to meet Hemmings in the last car of the train while it stopped in Payday. He also told them about how Jensen and Cal were going around asking a lot of questions about him and the night that Doc and Blackie were killed.
So I assume you're here because you sure as hell don't want the lady talking to Mayor Hemmings about what she saw last night.
Or anybody else. She needs to be eliminated from my life before that train gets to Payday, or I'm going to be in deep crap.
That might be difficult to manage, Buck. That train goes over some pretty rough country between here and Pueblo. There ain't hardly no place where it can easily be stopped, especially by 3 or 4 men. Maybe if we had a dozen or more.
I got that figured out. You all know the train don't actually come into Payday, but just stops outside the town to let people on and off.
The men all nodded.
Well, there's a grove of oak trees just before the train gets to its stop. I figure someone could hide in those trees and pitch a couple of sticks of dynamite into that car the lady's riding in. And that'd be the end of our problem once and for all.
What do you mean, our problem, Buck? Seems to me this lady is your problem, not ours.
I already told you once, Hogg. Any problem I got is a problem for all of us, unless you've got an aversion to keeping on getting rich off of me.
We already agreed to help you, Buck. But dynamite and a whole train to kill one little old lady seems a mite extreme, don't you think? A job like that would bring the federal marshals swarming down on payday like locusts. And I, for one, can do without that sort of grief.
You got a better idea, Jib? Like the kid said, there just ain't no good place to ambush that train and make it stop between here and Pueblo unless we had a dozen or so men. And I only count four here.
Don't need to make it stop. Since the lady was kind enough to tell us which car she was going to be in, it should be an easy matter to wait by that big clump of boulders right at the base of that last incline before the train gets to payday. When it starts up that hill, the train slows almost to a walk. Should be easy enough to ride up next to the windows in that car and put a couple of slugs in one little old lady.
Yeah, but we won't know which side of the car she'll be on.
That's why there's going to be two of us, kid, one on each side. Now, killing one little old lady, or even maybe a couple of others in that car, ain't going to be big enough news to bring no marshals down here. So since we got the local sheriff on our side, the investigations into the killings ought to pass on by easy enough without anyone getting fingered for it.
What about me?
You're going to stay here, Hog. Your fat ass is too distinct even with a mask on. The other people on the train are liable to recognize you.
Besides, your horse would probably have a stroke if it tried to haul your lard ass up that hill to catch that train.
Keep it up, kid. This lard ass is going to be sitting on your face before you know it.
After Smoke and Cal left Hemming's office, they went to the hotel.
I want you to pack an overnight bag, Cal. And then we're going to put you on today's train to Pueblo.
Why? I thought we were going to look into the sheriff's dealings and see what he's been up to.
That's exactly what you're going to be doing in Pueblo, Cal. If the sheriff has been stealing claims around here, he's sure not going to file them in the local claims office where everyone knows who he is. They'd all know he doesn't have time to be out prospecting for gold with his job here in town as sheriff.
I see. You want me to check the claims office in Pueblo for any claims listed under Buck Tolliver's name?
Not only claims listed under his name, Cal, but any claims he might be a partner in. I'm sure he's networking alone, but he's probably too smart and too cautious to let his partners have the claims in their names alone. So, he could be listed as partners with them in the claims with his name second on the recorded deed.
What about asking around the bank? If he's making all this money, he's got to be stashing it somewhere. And like you said, it sure as hell wouldn't be here in payday.
That's a good idea, Cal. But I don't think the bankers in Pueblo would talk to you about one of their customers, especially if he's got as much money as I think he has.
Oh.
But there's another way to get the information we need. As soon as you get to Pueblo, wire Monte Carson at our bank there and have him get the president to wire the bank in Pueblo for a credit report on Buck Tolliver. Have them say he's down there wanting to invest in some ranches and they need to know if he's good for the money.
Why not just wire Big Rock from here? Be a whole lot quicker.
I don't think Robert Jacobson is a man we can trust, Cal. I think the sheriff probably has him in his pocket, and the less Buck Tolliver knows about our business, the better I'll feel.
Smoke, that reminds me. You don't think he might have told the sheriff about when Miss Rule is coming to town, do you?
It wouldn't surprise me a bit, Cal. But I don't think bracing him about it would do any good. He's probably more scared of Tolliver than he is of me. So he'd probably deny it and we couldn't prove a thing. But if he did, and if the sheriff is as dirty as we think he is, then he won't be able to allow her to talk to Hemmings. I'll have to try and do something to keep her from talking.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to stick close to the sheriff without him knowing it. If he does go after her, maybe I can stop him before he gets to her and prevents her from clearing Pearlie's name.
You watch your back and ride with your pistols, Loose Smoke. The sheriff is almost certain to suspect we're on to him, so the chances are pretty good he'll come after you, too.
Yeah, don't worry, Cal. I never turn my back on a snake, especially one as slippery as Buck Tolliver. Of course, if he were to try something, it sure might solve all of our problems, because he'd be planted 6 feet under Boot Hill.
Come on, Smoke. Let's go get me packed and on that train.
As soon as Cal was safely on the train, Smoke went to the livery and asked Jerry to saddle up his horse. He wanted to be able to ride on a moment's notice if the sheriff decided to leave town. Jerry just stood there, his mouth hanging open slightly with a dazed look in his eyes.
You all right, son?
It's just that I never met a famous gunfighter before, sir.
Well, we're just like everyone else, Jerry. We put our pants on one leg at a time, just like you do.
Do you think you could sort of sign your name on my hat, Mr. Jensen?
Sure, if you'll get Storm saddled before it gets dark.
While Jerry was saddling his horse, Smoke glanced around casually.
Which horse belongs to Sheriff Tolliver?
Oh, it ain't here now. The sheriff took him out about an hour ago.
Is that so? You see which way he rode out of town?
Why are you asking, Mr. Jensen?
Don't worry, Jerry. I'm not going to shoot him or anything like that. It's just that he's got my friend in jail, and I owe him for some extra food I had him order from the hotel dining room. I thought if he was around, I'd pay him now and settle the bill.
Oh, well, in that case, he took the north road up into the mountains like he usually does when he goes riding.
He have a place up that way?
No, his ranch is off to the south where the land is flat. Ain't no good ranch land up north. It's too hilly up in the mountains. Nothing up there but gold mines and such.
I see.
Smoke gave Jerry a gold $2 piece and climbed up into the saddle.
Thanks, Jerry.
If I see the sheriff, I'll tell him you're looking for him.
Don't bother. I think I'll just leave the money in his desk at the jail where he'll be sure to find it. See you later, young man.
Smoke took the north road out of town and rode slowly, keeping a sharp lookout up ahead. He didn't want to run into the sheriff on his way back to town and have to explain what he was doing on the same road. He figured he was pretty safe from being bushwhacked, since the sheriff didn't know Smoke was tailing him. But he rode with his eyes searching both sides of the trail, just in case. There were too many tracks on the road to determine which ones were the sheriff's. It was actually little more than a trail where the horses and wagons had worn down the grass. Smoke figured he'd have to check each trail or path that turned off the road and hope that sooner rather than later he'd find the one the sheriff took. He'd gone up and down 6 or 7 trails with no luck by the time the sun began to set. This was no job to attempt in the dark, and so he reluctantly turned his horse around and headed back toward town, hoping the sheriff wasn't already on the way to do harm to Miss Rule. He considered trying to warn Hemmings that the sheriff might well know about Rule's planes, but finally decided against it. Hemmings just wasn't quite ready to think the sheriff was behind the killing, and Smoke didn't want to alienate him by pushing him too hard. He'd just have to hope that Cal came up with something before Rule came back to town and put herself in harm's way. He decided if the sheriff wasn't in town when he got back, he'd get up early the next morning and check out the rest of the trails to the north of town and try to find his hideout. He was just coming into town when he saw the sheriff leaving the livery. Smoke pulled his horse in and told Jerry to give it some extra oats and grain before bedding it down for the night. When he left the livery, he saw Tolliver entering the bat wings of the saloon down the street. Smoke loosened the rawhide thong on his colt and decided to follow him in. He pulled his hat down low on his head and slumped in his chair as he looked around the crowded room. After a moment, when his eyes adjusted to the relative gloom and smoke, he saw Tolliver sitting at a table across the room with 3 men. Smoke grinned slightly when he saw that one of the men was the gent he'd beaten up, who'd been with a man who'd later tried to kill him and Cal.
I see you're keeping bad company, Sheriff Tolliver.
The men had their heads down and close and were talking earnestly, evidently in low voices so they couldn't be heard above the clank of glasses and the rowdy laughter that was normal in saloons after dark.
I'll just bet those are your partners, Buck, old man.
Smoke ordered a beer and a plate of hard-boiled eggs when one of the waitresses came by, and he drank and ate slowly, keeping his head down and watching to see what happened across the room. In less than an hour, the sheriff and his men had finished their business, and all 4 got up and walked outside. Smoke noticed the bottle of whiskey they'd had at the table was still over half full, so the talk must have been about something important for them to forego drinking while they talked. He bet they were planning on how they could get to Miss Rule and keep her from talking. Smoke quickly got up, left through the back door, and peeked around the corner of the building to see what they did. He was disappointed when the men waved goodbye to the sheriff and made their way toward the hotel instead of the livery stable. Evidently, they were going to spend the night in town since they didn't seem to be in any hurry to get their horses out of the stable. Smoke wished Cal was with him. If the men separated in the morning, there was no way he could follow or watch all of them, and he figured the sheriff was probably enlisting their help and silencing the Rule Lady. As soon as Cal got off the train in Pueblo, he went straight to the telegraph office. He sent the telegram to Sheriff Monte Carson in Big Rock as per Smoke's instructions, and he even added a request that the sheriff inform everyone that Pearlie was all right physically, and they were going to make sure that he stayed that way. Then he went to the claims office. His heart fell when he saw stacks and stacks of folders arranged along both side walls and even all the way across the back wall.
Jiminy, I ain't never gonna get through all those files.
A gray-haired older lady who was puttering behind the counter smiled.
Excuse me, young man, I couldn't help overhearing you. Are you looking for a particular file or information on a particular mine?
Well, ma'am, I was going to, but seeing as how you got more claims in here than the number of people in the whole world, I'm sort of rethinking my options. I need to find out if a certain man has filed any claims for mines and such here, and if he has, who his partners in the ventures are.
Well, sonny, you look so cute standing there with your eyes big as melons that I'm going to take mercy on you and show you the easiest way through our little maze here.
Gosh, ma'am, that'd be great. I'm in kind of a big hurry, and if I don't find out what I need to know, a very nice lady might be hurt.
Oh, that sounds very serious. All right. First off, let's get the formalities out of the way. If I'm going to slog through all those dusty files for you, I should at least know your name. Mine's Martha Jameson.
Oh, excuse my manners, Mrs. Jameson. I'm Calvin Woods.
I bet they call you Cal, right?
Oh, yes, ma'am. Ever since I was a shave tail.
And there ain't no Mr. Jameson, so just call me Martha instead of Mrs.
Yes, ma'am.
Martha took a small pad of paper off the desk behind her and handed it to Cal with a pencil.
Now you just write down the names of all the men you're interested in and we'll get to work. You can read and write, can't you?
Oh, yes, ma'am. I graduated high school and everything, and my boss's wife used to be a school teacher, so she's been helping me with some college courses during the winter at the ranch.
You must be very lucky to have such a good friend and boss.
Yes, ma'am.
Cal wrote Buck Tolliver on the paper and smiled ruefully.
This is the name I know, but I just don't know who else may be involved with him. I assume the mines will be in the vicinity of the town of Payday.
Involved? What do you mean, involved?
Cal began to tell her what he and Smoke suspected about the sheriff's nefarious activities, and she stopped and stared at him with wide-open eyes.
Wow. It's like a great mystery, isn't it?
What do you mean, ma'am?
I've been reading the most delightful series of mystery stories by a British author, Conan Doyle, about a detective named Sherlock Holmes. They're all about how he uses deductive reasoning to solve crimes.
Within minutes, she was climbing up on a small three-step ladder and snatching various files off the shelves and flinging them at him.
Most of these claims are filed alphabetically by first letter of the last name and then filed by county, so we should be able to find someone with your fellow's name on it if they're here.
Within 10 minutes, they'd struck pay dirt. After that, it was relatively easy to follow Tolliver's trail through the maze of file folders. After they'd noted the names of men on the claims that had Tolliver listed first, they then went through the stacks and found lots of other claims with those other men's names listed first, though Tolliver was always there someplace. An hour and a half later, Cal folded up the paper on which he'd written the information they'd gathered and he stuck it in his pocket.
Can I offer you some money for helping me out, ma'am?
Of course not, young man. I did this to help you solve your mystery and free your friend from this sheriff's evil clutches.
Thinking that Martha sure did talk funny, Cal thanked her again and left, hurrying toward the bank to see if the wire from the bank in Big Rock had done any good. When he gave one of the tellers his name, he was immediately shown into an opulent office in the rear of the building. A portly man wearing a full suit, vest, and a carnation in his buttonhole grinned at Cal.
Howdy, Mr. Woods. I'm Gerald McManus, president of this bank. My, but you look awfully young to have such impressive credentials.
Credentials?
Yes. President of your bank back in Big Rock tells me you're out here to purchase some large tracts of land, that you're interested in the financial status of one of the men you're going into partnership with, Mr. Buck Tolliver. Of course, we'll be glad to be of any assistance to you that we can here at my bank. Would you care for a snifter of brandy or a cognac, Mr. Woods?
No, thank you kindly.
Do you plan on keeping any of your investment capital in this town, Mr. Woods, or will you use your bank back in Big Rock?
Well, I'm sure Mr. Tolliver and I need a local bank to handle some of our money. That is, if Mr. Tolliver is as well-heeled as he tells me he is.
McManus took a sheet off the top of his desk and handed it to Cal.
Here is a current financial statement on Mr. Tolliver's holdings in our establishment, which I'm sure will be more than adequate for almost any investment you two would care to make. And I understand that Mr. Tolliver also has dealings with both of the other banks in town, though I can't imagine why he doesn't just put all of his money in one place. It would be so much more convenient for him.
Can I take this with me?
Certainly. We here at the First Territorial Bank of Colorado intend to please.
As he left the bank, Cal saw that if he hurried, he had time to get a wire off to Smoke and still be able to make the afternoon train back to payday.
Smoke, got what I came for, and it's gonna knock your eyes out. Cal.
The train was already pulling out of the station, so he didn't have time to stop and buy a ticket. He just ran down the tracks after the last car and just managed to grab the rail and pull himself up.
Golly, that was close.
It certainly was, young man.
An elderly, white-haired woman sat in the next-to-last seat in the car.
I was afraid for a moment you weren't going to make it, and that you might trip and fall under the wheels.
Oh, no danger of that, ma'am. The train weren't going all that fast yet.
Wasn't.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Wasn't.
Cal took the seat across the aisle from her and leaned his head back to hopefully catch a few winks of sleep on the trip. If his luck continued to hold, the lady across the aisle wouldn't chatter the entire way to payday. Smoke was waiting outside the hotel, standing well back in the alley so he wouldn't be seen, when the three men Tolliver had been talking to the previous night in the saloon walked out of the door. Smoke had been there since just before dawn, and he watched the men walk down the street and enter a small cafe named Mom's. Glancing at his watch and seeing it was almost 11 o'clock in the morning, Smoke decided to stir up some action by following the men into the place and having himself some breakfast. He walked through the door and took a table in the rear of the rather small room, sitting so his back was to a wall and he had a clear view of the front door and the inhabitants of the place. The three men he'd followed had taken a seat near the front window, and they were just giving their orders to a plump, matronly woman wearing a flour-sacked apron and a kerchief tied on her head. After a few moments, the youngest of them happened to turn his gaze onto Smoke. Smoke almost grinned when the young man froze and his mouth dropped open and his eyes went wide. He hurriedly lowered his head and leaned in close to his companions, speaking rapidly. And then all of their heads turned and all of their eyes were on Smoke. Smoke grinned and dipped his head in greeting, as if he were just being polite to strangers whose eyes happened to meet across the room. The young man's face turned beet red. His right hand went to the gun on his hip, and he started to stand up until the oldest man at the table reached over and grabbed his arm, then whispered something under his breath that made the young man sit the hell back down. Just as the waitress was setting Smoke's coffee on his table, Sheriff Buck Tolliver walked into the room. He started toward the table with the three men, until one of them gave a quick shake of his head and looked over at Smoke. Tolliver followed his gaze and quickly altered his course and walked over to stand before Smoke's table.
Howdy, Mr. Jensen.
Hello, Sheriff. Care to join me for some breakfast? I know it's a bit late in the day, but I've been busy this morning talking to people about how things are here in Payday.
Sure. I don't normally eat breakfast this late. Since it's a bit early for lunch, I'll have a cup of coffee with you.
He glanced up at the waitress, who was still standing patiently waiting for Smoke's order.
Hey, Mom, bring me a cup of coffee, will you?
She nodded and looked down at Smoke.
3 hen's eggs, scrambled, 1/2 pound of bacon, crispy. Fried potatoes, sliced tomatoes if you have them fresh, and biscuits and gravy.
The woman nodded and walked off.
Now, just what am I going to do with you, Mr. Jensen? I can't have you running all over town, sticking your nose in where it don't belong. It won't look right to the citizens of this town that elected me to do that very thing.
First off, Sheriff, there's not a damn thing you can do about it. And I think you know it. But what I'm wondering is why it bothers you so much that I'm looking into the killings. Unless it's the fact that you railroaded my friend into jail for something you and your friends over there did.
I don't allow nobody to talk to me like that, Jensen.
Then fill your hands or shut your mouth, Sheriff. Because I'm going to say and do what I please.
No, I don't think I'll kill you right now, Jensen. I'd rather wait until I see the look on your face when your friend dances on the air at the end of a rope. Maybe then I'll put you out of your misery.
That's not going to happen, Sheriff.
Oh, and why not?
Because you and I both know you're dirty. You've disgraced that badge you're wearing dozens of times over. And I'm going to prove it. And when I do, not only will Pearly go free, but unless I miss my guess, you and your friends over there will be taking his place on that scaffold they're building down the street. Only there'll be 4 ropes dangling from it, not one.
Why, you...
Tolliver half raised from his chair and reached for his gun. His eyes widened and his mouth dropped open when he found himself staring down the barrel of Smoke's Colt before his hand even touched the butt of his own pistol.
Holy crap!
Hardy, who'd also seen Smoke's lightning-fast draw, just nodded. Sheriff Tolliver froze, his hand trembling over the butt of his pistol, no longer making a move to draw.
Sit down, Sheriff. Now, I don't know what you have against me, Tolliver, or why you've gone to so much trouble to hurt my friend, but I'll find out sooner or later, and we'll have a reckoning, you and me. You do know, don't you, Buck, that only one of us is leaving this town alive.
You can bet on it, Jensen. And I'll make sure and tell you why you're going to die before I plant you in the dirt.
Well, from what I've seen so far, Sheriff, you'd better bring plenty of help. Because if you're not any faster than I've seen so far, you'll be dead and laying on your back in the dirt before you ever clear leather.
Tolliver flushed again, then he got up and walked quickly out of the cafe, followed close behind by the men at the table across the room. As they walked down the street toward Tolliver's office, Jeb Hardy smiled.
Jesus, Buck, I've been around and I've seen some of the best in the business handle iron, but I tell you true, I ain't seen nobody as fast as Smoke Jensen.
You telling me you're afraid of him, Jeb?
Well, let's just say I got newfound respect for the man, that's all. But what I do want to say is that if you expect me to go up against something like that for you, you're going to have to come up with a lot more money than we talked about up till now. I still think I can take Jensen, but it'd be close. It'd probably take some lead in the deal, so I'm going to need a pretty good incentive to even try.
That goes for me too, Buck. That man is snake quick with a 6-killer, and I'd love to be the one that gets famous for putting him down. But, like Jeb said, it'd be a mighty tall risk.
Don't you worry none, Buck. I ain't afraid of that bastard Jensen.
That's because you're an idiot, Hog. Jensen already chewed you up and spit you out once, and word is he didn't break a sweat doing it.
What'd you call me, Jeb?
Before he could blink, Hardy had his pistol out and the barrel was punching up under Hog's chin, raising it until Hog was staring at the sky.
I said you're an idiot, Hog. Do you want to do something about it?
No, Jeb. It's all right. Like you said, Jensen done took me once.
Oh, for God's sake, why did you saddle me with such idiots for partners?
The others followed him into his office and closed the door behind him.
Now, you boys saw what Jensen did, and you know what you got to do, or he's going to be on us from now on like a duck on a June bug. Hog, You're going to head on back to the cabin. And Jeb, you and the kid are going to get your mounts and head on over to the hill coming into town and take out that meddling old lady in that last car of the train.
Oh, why can't I go with them?
Because you're pretty near worthless with a shotgun, Hog, and that express gun you carry won't go through the windows and walls of the train car. Besides, I want Jensen to follow you out of town so Jeb and the kid can do their jobs.
What makes you think Jensen will follow Hog to the cabin?
Because I'm going to go with him. Jensen can't afford to let me out of his sight. My guess is that Hemmings hasn't told him when the rule lady is arriving, so he'll have to follow me thinking I'm going to be going to take her out. And so when the news comes that Rule was killed by two gunmen, Smoke Jensen is going to be my alibi, that I was up in the mountains and nowhere near the train line when she was killed.
Good. Now that we got the plan out of the way, we need to do some more talking about the money.
What do you mean? We've already discussed the fact that since we're partners, you need to help me to keep the money coming in.
Yeah, but we ain't exactly equal partners, Buck. And since we're going to be pulling your fat out of the fire, I figure it's only fair that from now on, all the money we manage to liberate from the miners is split up into equal shares.
But...
And don't give us that I'm the sheriff business, because if we don't help you, you ain't going to be the sheriff for too much longer. As far as I'm concerned, everything we take in from now on gets cut into equal shares. You boys agree with that?
Akins and Hog both nodded, their eyes on Tolliver to see if he would agree.
All right. All right. Equal shares, but only after Miss Rule and Smoke Jensen are both dead.